Self-hypnosis is probably one of the more important topics for hypnotists, no matter if they are coaches or therapists. It is something that many of us learn in their trainings and after that no longer apply themselves. And self-hypnosis is so important for us, if we are hypnosis practitioners, to deal also with our own issues. Welcome to HypnoTalks, Question and Answers, and our episode on self-hypnosis. This is the concluding episode of our mini-series on hypnotic techniques. My name is Axel Hombach. I'm a hypnotist in Cologne, Germany. And I'm right now here in London with Dr. John Butler, the director of the HTI, the Hypnotherapy Training International. Hello, John.
Hello, Axel. Hello, listeners.
In the last week, when you gave your training course, you emphasized self-hypnosis over and over and over again. You went into great detail to practice, to explain various applications of self-hypnosis.
Yes.
Why should any hypnotherapist or hypnocoach learn and apply self-hypnosis?
Thank you, Axel. And I would like to have spent even more time on it.
Yeah,
if I had it.
1 week is almost too short to do that thoroughly.
I believe it's at the core of good practice that, first of all, the hypnotherapists learn it very effectively for themselves, which often is not the case, as witnessed by many people we've had on our courses. You've been there, you've seen them saying, well, I never learned this very well for myself. How can you become a good hypnotist if you've never developed your own connection with your subconscious to influence another person's subconscious? How can you teach them self-hypnosis? So, as you know, historically, Gil Boyne was one of the masters of teaching self-hypnosis. He learned it for himself very effectively. He taught it to others and became very successful in his career, both financially and in developing his reputation from those self-hypnosis classes he taught in Hollywood for 30 and more years. During which time he trained over 25,000 people from the public in the use of self-hypnosis. So what is it? Well, the word implies we learn to use hypnosis by ourselves. It is self-induced. That is only a partial explanation of what self-hypnosis is. But again, for the purpose of this discussion, to keep it very short, self-hypnosis also has been called auto-hypnosis. And the extra meaning of the word auto here, although self will also do, it's not only that we do it ourselves, but it's an automatic self-reinforcing process in which that feelings, ideas that are implanted in the subconscious come to conscious level and a conscious expression eventually is behavior. So we think based on these new feelings, emotionalized fixed ideas in the subconscious, now influencing our thinking and emotional levels at the more conscious level of awareness, then express the behavior, and these feed back in this looping way into the subconscious to become self-reinforcing. In much the same way as many people learn their negative self-beliefs, they're being reinforced over time, and the person comes to self-reinforce them. Anyway, to go into then the practice of developing this ability to use your subconscious deliberately, to putting it under your control, is so vital. And there are many skills and aspects to this work, Axel, that again, I can only briefly refer to here. And I'm not plugging the self-hypnosis book by Gil Boyne. I don't mean it in that vein. I simply mean there is a book that we publish on that, which is a condensation of all of the key elements of Gil Boyne's approach to learning and teaching self-hypnosis, teaching it to your clients, to yourself as well, and also to large groups or smaller groups.
And the fascinating aspect of Gil Boyne's book is it is one of the smallest books, and yet it contains the most knowledge.
It is wonderfully practical, effective. It avoids long-winded theories about the theories of hypnosis and how the mind works. You can read those theories, many of them very speculative. You can read them elsewhere. That's all fine and good. Here is a book that is very practical in its orientation. It gives you the principles, essential knowledge, and tools, the techniques that you can use. So let's get to the key elements in creating good self-hypnosis. Traditionally, it's been taught with the master hypnotizing the student, guru and chela, master and pupil. The master induces hypnosis with the student, Student goes into the trance. We ensure the client, student in this case, is entering a sufficient quality, responding well, the so-called deep level of hypnosis as far as possible. That's a whole other issue about depth, but we're talking about anyway, a person getting into trance, knowing and feeling, I am in a trance. Now we're going to give a cue, a signal to the client, to the student, that they can use to enter into that state whenever they wish or need to, without going through a long induction or any kind of other induction with themselves or somebody else inducing it. That can be done almost instantly. That cue word that's been used in the Ellman book mentioned is blue rose, or the word green, or gestures of the fingers and the thumb coming together, as you see in pictures of the yogis meditating, where they're going to the subconscious for meditative purposes, as opposed to intentionally directing their subconscious for mind-body development, mind-body control, which the yogis learned as they heated themselves up in the snow, as they control their heart rate, their blood pressure, and the pain, if they have to deal with a pain. I have taught many people self-hypnosis, and they've learned it to control their pain. There are some of my students out there, they've used it for their own dental procedures, for surgery, and they've used it in place of sedation and chemical anesthetics. And there are people have come to me because they've seen me use self-hypnosis through the internet. They've seen a short film clip.
Where you are operated on, yeah.
Yeah, and they say, wow, you're obviously walking your talk. People talk about it, but they don't necessarily demonstrate it. So you're showing it in action there. Okay, well, that's true. Now, everybody can learn to use their subconscious power. Getting into the trance, as I say, once you've learned to get into it with somebody and they've given you the cue, that's the easy bit, Axel. What books often fail to deal with, or deal with very superficially, is how to use the state yourself, to program yourself effectively, because you're playing two roles. You're playing the role of the therapist administering the suggestions, which requires a level of conscious thinking, which at the same time is now going to be apparently conflicting with being in the subconscious state. You're trying to be objective and subjective together at the same time. And the books really gloss over that. They don't tell you how to deal with it. They'll just tell you, well, remain as relaxed as you can while giving those suggestions and keep the suggestions simple. Well, there's an element of truth in that, but that's very superficial advice. That's very limiting, because as you practice self-hypnosis, you learn to go into more profound states over time. And you want to be able to give good programming at the same time. And good programming, as you know, must be comprehensive, deal with the issues properly. So in a nutshell, and I don't want to gloss over this too quickly, so I recommend you read the book, come on a course, find a good practitioner who knows about this. You'll learn that you have to develop the script that you want.
And know the language, how to scribe, write a script.
Absolutely. Your therapist needs to guide you in how to use hypnotic language. The use of words effectively for the subconscious, which is different than how you communicate at the conscious level. It's similar but different in key areas. Okay, so you've now developed this, I don't like the word script that much, but you know what I mean. It's a series of well-crafted programming instructions in the right language. And you have that worked out for the particular goal. And we take one major goal area at a time in self-hypnosis and in therapy generally. All right, so then you're going to condense this further into some key sentences that represent the core of that programming instruction, the series of suggestions, the script so-called. Then you're going to condense it into a few, well, if you like, key ideas that will form then the next step, a slogan, like a strap line in advertising and marketing. You're going to get a good slogan that symbolizes, represents, at that emotional level, triggers your emotions effectively for the goal area you're working on.
And when you now say slogan, that way you condense the script into one sentence, for example.
That's right.
And this sentence, the slogan, has the form of an affirmation.
Absolutely.
And this way an affirmation gets its power if it has given some more meaning.
Yes.
Tailor-made to yourself, of course.
Absolutely. When you have got that process complete, and that can take a few sessions, maybe over four sessions, working with the therapist, taking it away, thinking about it, using it on yourself, maybe put in a recording listening to that. And so you get the feeling, is this doing the job? There's a need further thinking, changing, tweaking. As you know, developing a good slogan. I mean, we have many slogans out there. We have Coke, the real thing, Nike, just do it, and many others. They're well-crafted over time, usually, based on effects that they've had on the marketing, in the marketing campaigns. They've been tested in focus groups, and so on and on. So they're not just random, they're carefully worked out. We do the same for ourselves. So we end up with a very good slogan. So in the trance, as we go into the trance with self-hypnosis, based on the trigger words and cue, it may be the physical cue, whatever, or we use the three deep breaths method as a general, kind of generic way of inducing self-hypnosis for people at the beginning. It's very effective and very useful. Other methods can be developed later on, because once you've got the trance, you can set it up so that whenever a certain gesture, word, symbol is used, that's your signal to create the trance. It becomes a conditioned response. All right, so now as you're reading your script before I'm to you, again, reinforce the ideas. Maybe it's a page of A4, that's 500 words. You've got your shortened version, few sentences. You've got that slogan then. You can now simply relax in the trance and use the slogan. Let it just drift through your mind and let your mind relax. You're using the very, 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 very minimal conscious effort. And we say less conscious effort, more subconscious response. The Wu Wei principle again, and so on. Now, as we go into the trance, then we can just let ourselves relax 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever predetermined time we've agreed. Maybe setting your alarm clock as well, just in case you're worried about falling asleep, although hypnosis is not sleep. So then at the end, you have your signal as well. You've learned that from your trainer. Whenever you want to bring yourself out of hypnosis, you simply count to 5 and so on. So you've got a good trance termination there. So it's by practice, repetition, that trigger will get better. The quality of the trance will get better. Your programming will get better. I'm just going to mention one other element, which I mentioned at the course last week, where we're going through this in some depth. We did a group version of an induction and a self-hypnosis signal, a trigger signal. I mentioned that you can develop a symbol as well, which represents your programming, represents, it's like with your logo and your symbol for your company, your brand image. So that symbol can be very powerful. So again, the old saying, picture worth 1,000 words, and a symbol worth 1,000 pictures almost.
The symbol method is also explained in the manual of Gil Boyne, where he writes the script, and at the beginning or at the end of the script, it says, this script is represented by water tap, for example.
Yes, yes, yes. It could be that bubbling spring for the creativity.
Yeah.
There you have what, like a good suggestion. You've got the words, positive, affirmative, and you've got the image.
And the fascinating thing is when you do it that way, you have your script, and with that script you fill the sentence, the affirmation, or the symbol. And when you go into hypnosis, the only thing you have to do is keep this affirmation or symbol in your head and let it work.
Yes.
Because when you have read and developed the script beforehand, all the neural networks have already been activated and you just reactivate what's going on.
That's what Gil Boyne described, exactly like that. He said, you prepared the bullet, your wonderful slogan and symbol, and then you go into the trance and then you just have to pull the trigger with the bullet. You don't have to think about the suggestion. You don't have to worry about, am I saying it the right way? Have I, you know, have I screwed it up in any way? You're getting the conscious critical factor of the mind, so-called, move to the side. Very quickly, though, many therapists hold back. Many therapists are reluctant, subconsciously, to teach clients self-hypnosis. Maybe they don't feel they know enough about it themselves. Maybe they feel the client won't experience very much from it. They're letting their own inadequacies, lack of confidence, get in the way. They've never been trained properly in their courses. This is, again, one of the great problems we have in the field of such variations in quality and standards. And even when we talk about standards in this field, often we're talking about minimum NVQ type standards, you know, national occupational standards. They're useful, but there's such a minimal level compared to what a high functioning practitioner does, like Gil Boyne, Dave Ellman, and so on.
I can speak from my own experience. I have had hypnosis trainings where self-hypnosis wasn't taught at all.
Yes.
And in others, what was done is, let's call it, a trigger was installed, like as you said, a cue was installed that you use, and then you had a list of affirmations from which you could choose. But as it should be obvious from what we've talked about, an affirmation has no changing quality as long as we haven't given it a tailor-made meaning that's tailor-made to us.
Yes, it may sound good. It may be some kind of metaphysical one. Mm-hmm. Then you say, oh, that's nice, I believe in that. Or even the more metaphysical platitudes, you know. But at the end of the day, it doesn't resonate as real, as emotionally powerful, as true for you. Yeah, it's all very well to say these things, but that's taking us more into the world of how to devise good programming and suggestions, which is a whole art and science of its own. Anyway, therapists, when they work with a client, make a recording. That's teaching the client to get into the subconscious. Their mind can begin to recognize that trance state and reproduce it themselves for themselves. However, the next step then, particularly when you're seeing them over a series of sessions, normally you would teach them self-hypnosis. And that is conveying very importantly to the client that the power, the state resides in them, not in the therapist, not just when they're there interacting with the therapist, but in them. It's there in them as well for themselves to use. So they're powerful. And that's, again, a struggle for some hypnotists. They want to subconsciously feel that they've created the change in the client. They want the glory. They want the satisfaction. So they're dealing with their own inadequacies through the therapy, rather than the needs of the client, where they learn how to use, to discover and how to use their subconscious power. And self-hypnosis is so important and valuable for that, for them. And so we must take that on board and learn the power of self-hypnosis for ourselves as therapists to become even better therapists. How many therapists do you know in the field that we've seen who are heavy smokers, who are overweight, who have all kinds of emotional issues? And when you don't even listen to them talking, and you realize how some of them have obviously got some personal issues that makes them want to appear, shall we say, compensatory, grandiose, making exaggerated claims. In other words, showing great signs of insecurity and inferiority in themselves. And I've had psychiatry friends of mine who've said, well, some of the people you have out there promoting hypnotherapy, training and so on, hypnotherapy as therapists, they have so many issues, that bristling with issues themselves, sounds like they need some therapy help and they need to learn to practice and use self-hypnosis effectively for their goals, to change themselves in particular.
Our time is already coming to an end again, John.
Yes.
Before I ask you to make the traditional summary, one last question which we could talk probably about in a whole episode. There's this phrase out there, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. What do you say about that in just a few sentences?
Firstly, it's simplistic. In other words, it's missing a completeness. It is true that the hypnosis must involve the client's element cooperating. Their subconscious is producing a state within them. The therapist's role is very important. And the therapist's role in a good therapist is having a very powerful influence on the subconscious processes with the client. And is that interaction between the two of them, is that unity of minds at the conscious and subconscious level that is producing the state. And if the role of the therapist was minimal or insignificant, then all therapists would be more or less equal, would they not?
And nobody would need us.
Yeah, we'd largely be redundant, certainly very quickly in the therapy. So again, it's said, and often in academic books, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. And I think it's often used to reassure clients they're not being controlled, but it is unfortunately not accurate enough. It is true because in the past, sometimes clients would feel, well, the therapist has the magical power. Look at the stage hypnotist, and they don't understand what the stage hypnotist is doing and so on. So that feeling that that power of the hypnotist, well, the hypnotist, if they're any good, does have power. They don't have to show off or appear in any sound or look in any certain way that's designed to make them look beyond the norm. They understand about the mind. They understand about programming, suggestions, so on, and the trance. At the same time, they have knowledge that's very critical for the client to be able to activate their subconscious. So no, hypnosis is not simply self-hypnosis. It's self-hypnosis and heteroic hypnosis combined in a very complex interactive process.
Thank you so much, John. And please sum up what we've talked about in a few sentences.
Self-hypnosis, Axel, is the ability of the client to work with their subconscious directly themselves, starting with being given a cue, a trigger word, or some form, maybe it's a behavioral thing that they do, that reinduces the state of hypnosis, having been in that experience of hypnosis with the therapist. That gives power to the client, very vital for them to feel and know they have the power. It really helps them progress in their therapy, in their lives. It does involve learning how to get into the state well, and it involves learning the art of programming in the state using the slogan and symbol method. It involves many very important, sophisticated processes, and that's taught properly to clients. And in the Gilboyne training in self-hypnosis, you see how he explains the dynamics, trance and suggestion very well. So the client really understands what self-hypnosis is about, which gives them great power, helps the therapist in their job of helping the client improve, and everybody gains by that. So it should be used by therapists and clients to very high levels of effectiveness.
Thank you so much, John, for your insight, and talk to you soon again in our next episodes.
Thank you very much, Axel, and thank you to all our listeners.
That concludes our mini-series on hypnotic techniques, and we are now going to think about which mini-series we are starting with the next episode.
Good, and let's hear from our listeners as well. They can email us and so on. We'll take things from there.